The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Now, one of the reasons that I love Cool Stuff Inc. is because of their rewards program, which you become a member of just by making a purchase. After that, every purchase you make pushes you towards another level of the program, which means even more savings. Right now, I'm on level 6, which means I save 8% on all of my magic singles and 2% on booster boxes and board games. So head on over to CoolStuffInc.com and start saving money today. Hey, girlfriends, welcome to episode number 6 of the Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And welcome back to the show. I don't know if you guys saw this or not. I've been sending you a flurry of emails, but we've received even more reviews on iTunes.
Woo!
Yeah.
The show just blew up. I admit that I check iTunes every day because I'm obnoxious like that. And we had the one review from last week, and then all of a sudden there were 4 more. And they were all 5 stars.
Boom.
I mean, people are just showering us with love. I don't know what to say.
Well, I'm glad it's going that way.
Yeah. We have 5 5-star reviews and 1 4-star review. And some of the people who were nice enough to leave us some kind words, Swollen Pigeon, a couple of awesome ladies talking about magic-related topics. Thank you. Bobby Gunn, a refreshing take on a popular podcast. Keep up the great work. Applesauce 1776, fantastic MTG podcast and well worth the listen. And last but not least, Hooper says, very good and very different. Can't wait to listen to more. Man.
Those are awesome.
Yeah, it's very, very lovely. The reviews mean a lot, and we are so grateful for them. So please keep the love coming, because the more love that we get, the more likely we are to keep doing this.
Yeah.
I keep waiting for somebody to leave a review with a really funny name, because they know that we're going to, like, read them. So I keep waiting for somebody to be like, Dirty Panty 67, and it's like, and then, you know, the episode's going to start, and I'll be like, thank you, Dirty Panties. Oh, wait. Well, I used to think about that when Star City Games used to do those contests where they would give people, like, 3 months of premium.
Oh, yeah.
And they would read people's Twitter handles. I had Patrick Sullivan on my show, and I said to him, do you guys ever get somebody with a really obnoxious name and you can't give them the prize because you can't read it on camera? And he was like, no, but I really kind of want to look for a name now. And I think that'd be awesome.
So. Yeah.
So speaking of listeners, Hallie, you mentioned that one of your friends listened to our last episode, and he was nice enough to come up with a horror movie bathroom ranking scale for us.
He did. Do you guys want me to read it on the air?
Oh, I want you to read it all.
Okay, mm-hmm. Let me find it. Hold on just 1 second.
It made me laugh out loud.
Yeah.
I was at a blood drive, like, oh my God, and I start laughing, the daughter comes up, I'm like, I'm sorry, you wouldn't understand.
You wouldn't understand what I'm going through.
Oh my God.
Okay, so this bathroom ranking scale, entitled The Scale of Bathroom Apocalypse, comes from my dear friend Andrew, who is one of my closest Magic playing friends here in Seattle, big casual player, EDH player, plane chase player. And he's also a big fan of bad movies and horror movies. So this is his scale of bathroom apocalypse, ranked from 1 to 6, 6 being the worst. Okay. 1, Dawn of the Dead. A bathroom you'd fight your way through a horde of zombies to escape. Number 2, Alien. A bathroom that you'd crawl through enclosed vents, prowled by a hideous alien to escape. 3 is Saw. A bathroom that you would saw your foot off to escape. Number 4 is Eraserhead, a bathroom you'd accept custody of an inhuman monster baby to escape.
Sounds horrible.
That's the only movie I've never heard of before.
Number 5 is Hellraiser, a bathroom that you'd consign yourself to a possible eternity in hell to escape. And finally, The Human Centipede, a bathroom that you can only escape by playing an unsupervised one-on-one game of magic against Alex Bertoncini. And that is The Scale of Bathroom Apocalypse by Andrew Marcus. Thank you, Andrew.
Oh, man. So is that implying that Alex is the centipede?
I don't know. He was just, like, looking for movies about cheating.
Because I've actually seen, I'm ashamed to admit that I've seen both of the Human Centipede movies, and typically they involve lots of people, but I could see that being a nice little pun to indicate that Alex is the insect, and you have to deal with him to get out.
Right.
I'm down with that. Yeah, that is super lovely, and thank you so much, Andrew, for doing that. But, you know, I don't want to seem like we're only calling out the bad stores or the bad bathrooms, because there are a lot of stores out there that do take very good care of their bathrooms. I know when Chris and I were at the Midnight pre-release, the store that we were playing at Coliseum Games, they mopped like twice in the course of the Midnight pre-release, and that bathroom was always sparkling, always smelling good. And we'd like to give a shout-out to these stores that are going the extra mile to give us a nice clean bathroom, which leads to our big announcement for this episode. We are going to be holding a contest to find the most beautiful LGS bathroom. Okay? So if you think yours is the nicest, send us a picture or two at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com or on Twitter before April 30th. We will go over the submissions, and the people who send us the one, the person who sends us the one that we like the most, will receive a $25 gift card from coolstuffinc.com, which you can use at their physical booth if you're at a GP, or you can use it online. I think this will be fun.
Because,
Chris, you were nice enough to send us pictures of your store bathroom.
Yes. It was just so nice. And I couldn't help but have the subject line be, I'm a bathroom creepier, because that's how I felt. I was like, oh my God, I'm being so weird right now. And then I told the store owner that I did it.
How did they react?
He was very pleased that I've talked very nicely about the store's bathroom, because I was like, yeah, on your show, I'm always like, yeah, Rockettes has a really nice, you know, bathroom and everything. He's like, oh, I really appreciate that, you know, you guys noticed that and stuff like that. So once he finds out that about our little contest, I'm sure he'll be very happy to know that that kind of was the instigator for that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny how stores, you know, and even restaurants or, you know, other things like that are so conditioned to think that you're only going to complain about them. Or like, you know, when I went to Coliseum for the first time, I had a really good time. And I remember when I called the owner over and I said, hey, I just want to talk to you for a second. He was like, yeah, what'd we do? And I'm like, no, I had this was a really well-run event. Everybody was really lovely. You had a clean bathroom. And he was like, oh yeah, thanks. And, you know, so we do try to balance the good with the bad. And if we have a great experience, we want to let people know that. And that's the purpose of the contest. So on to the topics. SCG Syracuse was this past weekend. And holy aggro. I think it was 22 out of the top 32 decks were classified as aggro.
Ridiculous.
What was horrible. That, ladies?
Horrible. Horrible.
Yeah, 19 of them were green-red.
I mean, come on, Blue Mages. Where were the control decks?
There were
they
some.
Suck.
They're somewhere.
They were there. Someone was on stream. I think it was, oh, God. Adam Barnello and James Buckingham, I think it was. They were both playing Esper control mirrors versus one another. Mm-hmm. That was pretty cool. So they were there, just not up there.
Yeah.
Just not up there. Makes me really sad.
I mean, is it the fact that it's the start of a new format and aggro is just a safe bet? Is it that the control decks aren't good enough to compete yet? I mean, I thought blue-black was a thing for a while. Like, I just didn't expect this.
Blue-black kind of held its own for a little bit, but, I mean, it's a really, like Adrian Sullivan has said, a very unforgiving deck. And so, like, if you make a mistake, you really do pay for it. And maybe people just aren't ready to give control a chance again. I mean, there's some really dope cards, don't get me wrong. Like, Silmgar Scorn, like, that was pretty cool. Watching when the two of them were playing, one put out the Dragon Lord Silmgar and took the other player's Narset, and I was like, oh, shit. That is very bad. Because Narset is really awesome, and I think that, you know, she could be cool in control. But I don't know. So maybe we just need a little more time. But yeah, it could have been the safe bet. Maybe that's why people decided to do it.
Yeah, it seems to me like at the beginning of a lot of new standard formats, the aggro decks kind of come out of the gates first, and then it takes the control decks a couple weeks to sort of figure out how to correctly answer all of the threats in the format. So we could see a bit of a switchover, especially like with the Pro Tour coming up. I know there are a lot of people who play at the Pro Tour or in the Pro Tour Hall of Fame who will play blue no matter what. So we'll see what they come up with.
I mean, I'm used to aggro decks having a little bit of a splash in a new format, but to tell you the truth, I have not seen them come out of the gate this strong. We're 20 out of 30. I mean, I'm used to, like, maybe the top 5 out of the top 8 or something, but then you go past the top 16 and you see a better variety, and no, it was just aggro. What? It was like a saturation almost.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely some cards that came out in the new set that answer some of the really prevalent mid-range cards, like Dromoka's Command with the Sacrifice and Enchantment mode. That hates on Change of the Rocks, it hates on Mastery of the Unseen and the Green-White Devotion decks. And then we have Roast. Roast was in a whole bunch of decks, you know, two mana, destroy target Siege Rhino. Like, those cards are really prevalent.
And there were people, Wild Slash was also predicted to be popular, so there were people that weren't playing Rabble Master as much to try to adjust to that.
Right.
That was interesting. I know even Abzan Midrange had a hard time with the Dragon deck, the Green-Red Dragons deck that Chris Van Meter played and won the Open with. Between that Thunderbreak Regent and the Stormbreath Dragon, even Abzan had a hard time keeping up. And that's saying something, because Abzan has been holding steady since rotation happened, and even that was having problems.
Mm-hmm.
So where do we think the format's going to go? I mean, like, is there anything you're expecting from the Pro Tour? Is there anything you'd like to see happen?
I think that Sultai will be an impact. Like, Drown in Sorrow and Bioblight are obviously just very powerful removal spells. And I think, I don't know how much testers base anything on the recent Star Cities or whatever, but those are pretty good removal spells for aggro and beyond. And so I think that Sultai, just because it has cards like Back to Nature, which answer a wide variety of things, and Whip, and I think that that deck will be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Are you thinking more like Sultai Reanimator or Sultai Control or like Sultai Super Friends? Because people have tried different things.
I don't think Super Friends. I would say somewhere in between like Control and Reanimator. Like, I could see the reanimation part being a finisher, but it basically just plays like a control deck.
Something else I noticed that came up after the Star City Open was people took issue with the fact that some of those decks were considered aggro. Like, I know Frank Lepore had said something along the lines of, if you have a 7 converted mana cost dragon in your deck, you can't call yourself aggro. Are you all sticklers like that? Like, are you the type of people who will look at a deck and say that's not aggro? Or do you have certain standards for what counts as an aggro deck?
Yeah, I'm kind of like that. Like, I wouldn't even call Chris Van Meter's deck an aggro deck because he had so many 4 and 5 drops. Like, I would call that red green mid range, but that's just me.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I'd like to see something happen. I was really excited by Gerard Fabiano's deck. I admit that I don't normally pay attention to Gerard, not because he isn't good or anything, but he does tend to play control decks, and that's not really my forte. But when I saw the poll on his latest article, and one of the options was Jund, I was like, vote! Told everybody around me to vote. He retweeted my tweet telling people to vote, and the deck he ended up playing was a little different than the deck he suggested, but it was still Jund. He came in, what, 9th place? I think he just missed it?
Yeah.
Yep, 9th.
Yeah, and he did very well with it. So I would love to see Jund somehow. You know, I think that the tools are there. I think Anger of the Gods is criminally underplayed right now.
Yep.
You know, I've tinkered around with it myself, but I just think there's some missing pieces there. But maybe somebody at the Pro Tour will find a way to fix that.
Mm-hmm.
So, now, if I remember correctly, all of us had events this past weekend that we went to. Is that right?
Not me.
You
I worked.
Okay. Hallie, why don't you start us off? You had a MTGO pre-release event, yeah?
Yeah, on Saturday morning I played in a Magic Online pre-release just kind of on a whim, and I chose Kolaghan because that was my favorite Dragon Brood from the paper pre-release. So I just sort of gave it a shot, and I opened a really insane pool. I ended up going 4-0. And
awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. My promo card was Boltling Marauder, which is the 5/4 dragon for 5 that says that whenever a creature comes into play, you can give a target creature +2/+0 until end of turn. And I had 2 of those. But I think the real star of my deck was Warbringer, which is like a card that I really love in this format. It's the 3/3 for 3 and a red that makes all of your dash costs cost 2 less.
Oh.
So I had that, and I had like 8 to 10 other dash creatures in my deck, including 2 of Sprinting Warbrute, which is the 5/4 that has to attack every turn.
Yeah.
So there was one game where I play a turn for Warbringer, and then I untap, I miss my land drop, but I have 4 lands, and so I dash out 2 Sprinting Warbrutes and just hit my opponent for 10, which was kind of absurd. But I had that. I had Ambuscade Shaman, the black uncommon, which is one of my favorite cards in this format. I had Reckless Imp. I had Mardu Scout. I had Lightning Berserker, Zergo Bellstriker. Just, like, lots of really solid creatures. So there were some turns where I was dashing out, like, 3-4 creatures in a turn, and my opponent had Sorcery Speed Removal and couldn't really deal with it.
Wow. So,
yeah, I really love dash in this format. The only thing I would change about the deck, I posted my deck on Twitter. You can see it on my Twitter account. The only thing I would change is that my boyfriend Robert was looking over my shoulder and saw that I had a Haven of the Spirit dragon in my pool. And he was like, oh, you should totally play that. Like, you have 2 dragons. You can get them back. And I was like, I don't know. Like, this deck seems really mana intensive. And he was just, like, insistent that I put this card in my deck. And I never drew it, and I was very glad that I didn't, because my deck was really mana intensive. Like, I had to keep paying mana to dash things almost every turn. So if I could do it over again, I would play a mountain instead. But otherwise, my deck was really awesome, and I was really happy with how the event went.
Do you like... Okay, so you said that you like dash in this format.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about, like, not just committing to the board? Like, are there games where that's awkward?
I mean, there are some games where it is, especially if your opponent is racing you. Like, if I were to play, like, the Black-Red Mirror, I would probably be committing more creatures to the board. But against some of the slower, grindier decks, it just gets really out of hand. When you can just, like, play 4 creatures and hit them with all of them, and they don't have the time to react.
Right.
It's like your opponent taps out, then it's just like they made the biggest mistake.
Okay. Cool.
I have to give you credit, Hallie, because it seems like you're so versatile. You know, I was talking to your friend Kale earlier on Twitter because I didn't know what I was going to play this weekend for the States, and she was like, you should play aggro. And you know, I admit that I'm one of those people where I know my wheelhouse is mid-range. I can't do aggro. I really can't do control. And one of the things I admire about you so much is that I've seen you play control. I've seen you play aggro. And I love that about you, that you could just pick up a deck of a different style and just rock it, because I can't do that. So hats off to you.
Thanks. I mean, it comes from 2 places. One, obviously, is that I draft a lot. And when you draft, you become more versatile. You have to sort of go with the flow of the draft and take whatever you want. Like, I did a draft yesterday. I did one of the 64-person drafts on Magic Online, and I ended up in blue-black control because I opened Dragonlord Silumgar, and I was just like, okay, blue-black is open. I'm taking all these Ojitai's summons and these exploit creatures and these things, and I just sort of went for it. And I don't know, I've learned the ins and outs of a lot of different play styles just through drafting. And another thing is that I mentioned this in an article I wrote recently. Like, I've play tested a lot with a certain group of people, and everyone in that group sort of like sticks to their own deck. And so if we're sort of like running through a testing gauntlet, I'm usually the most flexible person who will be like, oh, let me play this boogeyman deck that everyone wants to test against. And I think by being the one who is willing to pick up the decks that no one else wanted to play, I sort of learned how to play those decks, and I learned how to play a wider variety of decks. So I would say, like, draft more and, you know, be open to playing more decks and testing with your friends. Like, that's those are the 2 best ways to become a more versatile Magic player.
Sure. Katie, you had a PPTQ, yeah?
Yep.
How did that go?
I won.
You won the whole PPTQ?
Yay!
No, I awesome. Just trolled you guys. I'm sorry. Horribly. I'm so sorry.
You got my hopes up.
I know. I almost spit out my beer.
Yeah, no. This weekend just wasn't my weekend. I did crush Jund round one. I cast Lingering Souls, and he tried to cast Maelstrom Pulse, and I countered it, and the game went according to plan.
Were you playing Esper Mentor?
No, I played my four-color brew, which multiple other people at the tournament were also playing, so I knew their list, but I changed my list to beat their list, so had that going for us. Round two, I played Living End, and we have a few different people in Montana that play Living End, and they've all started playing Blood Moon's main board, and that's just really, really difficult, because they have, like, Simeon Spirit Guides. They can cast Blood Moon on turn one.
I've done it.
Nobody likes that. Don't do that. Stop that. And so I lost to him, and then round three I played Splinter Twin, and we had good games. They were just, my deck was not drawing quite so well, and his wasn't being very impressive either, but we kind of dirtled about till I lost. Then my fourth round opponent didn't show up, so I got food. And then I played the Mirror in round five. Somebody who's playing my exact list from the other weekend. And we were basically just playing for fun. Neither of us thought we were in prize contention. But apparently, like, if I had won, I probably would have been in the prizes. But his breakers were worse, and he won. And he didn't get prizes, so... It was a pretty disappointing, but I had fun all weekend and got to have dinner with a bunch of people that don't get to see very often, so it was all right. Only had to drive an hour instead of three, so that's always a plus side.
Yeah,
gotta find the positive somewhere.
I went to TCG States at my local game store on Saturday. I was playing Adrian Sullivan's Obliterator Rock deck, and I finished 3-3. Jackie Lee was famous for finishing 11th a lot of the time. I finish 50-50 a lot of the time. So, like, I'm sort of like, you know, the 50-50 version of Jackie Lee. Like, I seem to find myself breaking even a lot, and I don't quite know how to get over that hump. But I lost to a four-color aggro, or possibly even five-color, something called Tribal Flames or Tribal...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I played that when I first started playing Magic. That deck is kind of gross.
It's so gross, especially because it has, you know, so it's Wild Nacatl and Kasali Pride Mage into Siege Rhino, and then you're like, you know, normally against an aggro deck, you can kind of stabilize at like four. You know, you're out of bolt range, so you're like, okay, I still have a chance. I was at like seven, and I was like, I'm at seven. I can get out of this, and then Tribal Flames.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, so Steam Vents is a mountain and island, and Godless Shrine is game two. And then I lost to Merfolk, which was very upsetting for me. The most frustrating game I faced that day was the last round of the day. I stayed for the whole thing, and I was playing in basically a BG mirror. I was on BG, he was on Jund. And I'm a student of Willie Edel and Reed Duke, and I was always taught that when you're in the black-green mirror, you board out most of your discard or all of your discard because it's redundant and because that matchup usually comes down to top decks, and you don't want to be top decking an Inquisition of Kozilek on turn eight. You just don't. So me being the experienced BG player, me being the person who did her homework, I boarded out for that matchup appropriately. My opponent did not. So he kept all of his discard in, and then it was like turn one IOK, turn two Thoughtseize, turn three Liliana, and I didn't top deck an answer. And I was just blown away. And I mean, I guess it worked for him. Like, I mean, he won and he made top eight, because I was a pair down for him. But I couldn't help but ask him. I was like, did you seriously keep all of your discard in? And he was like, yeah. As if the thought never crossed his mind that this might be a bad idea. I took it to Twitter, and I was like, am I the only one who does this? Like, is it just me? And people were like, no, girl, you should be doing that. Like, who's keeping in seven discard spells in a discard mirror? That's ludicrous. Mm-hmm. And apparently it seems to be a trend where people just aren't maybe fluent in the matchup, or they just pick up Jund decks and kind of face roll them. I don't know. But I was really, it just didn't go the way I thought it was going to go. Chris, you have a friend at your local game store, Josh. Josh is usually on BGX decks, and we've played very fulfilling mirrors where we both get it. And we'll even talk about it, like, all right, out go the IOKs. And they turn into really fun, grindy games because they get it. And this guy was just face rolling it, like, I have discard. And I was just, it just wasn't the great time I had in mind. Like, I love playing Jund because of the Jund mirror. And this was just so different.
I had the exact same thing. So in the Planeswalker tournament a few weeks ago that I made top four, I lost to blue white red control because I boarded out all my burn spells like any control player would in the mirror, and he basically just burned my face till I died. Yeah. And I was like, you know, that's not how you board. And he's like, yeah, I didn't really know how to board. And I was like, well, it's not like that. And he was like, but it worked. And I was like, yeah, but the odds of you drawing enough burn to burn my face to kill me in a game where we're both drawing a lot of cards and playing counter spells is not very high. Mm-hmm. And he just didn't really seem to get like what I was trying to say, but I was like, this is not how you play control mirror. I just want to grind and you're stopping me from grinding.
It's tricky because I already struggle with sideboarding. So even the merfolk player that I played, he kept in all his ether vials against me. And typically I remember reading Martin Jews's merfolk guide, and it was my understanding that merfolk players took out their ether vials because we have abrupt decay and things of that nature. So I didn't bring in Ancient Grudge, assuming that we're at a tournament, he's going to be hip to what's going on. And then what does he do? Turn one ether vial. And I was like, I expected you to be more knowledgeable or to be better, so I was planning for that. You know what I mean? I didn't plan on you not being proficient in the matchup, and so I boarded, and it just felt weird, you know?
It's really interesting, because Patrick Chapin has never, I mean, I'm sure he's done well, but he doesn't do as well at tournaments like Grand Prix, because people don't play well enough for him to play well.
Yeah.
And he said, I think he stated it in maybe one or two articles, where like he does well at the Pro Tour because those people are used to playing against good people and playing everything correctly, and he does well when that's the meta. But if the meta is like, you know, a bunch of randoms and he's like playing, you know, like a pro player, and they're not, and he's, that makes him look worse and do worse in the course of a tournament.
I agree with that, and it's really hard not to, it's hard to not make that sound personal. Like, I'm not bashing anybody, I'm not trying to shit on anybody, but I agree with that. You know, you go into an experience expecting a certain level and expecting a certain quality, and you don't always find that, and it's tough to walk that line without hurting anyone's feelings or making it sound, you know, like you're going after people. But, and it also makes it harder to prepare for, you know, because Modern is such a diverse format, you know, you're thinking, oh, I'm only going to face these 8 decks. And then all of a sudden you're facing Tezzeret control and you're like, I have nothing against this. So,
I forgot. I didn't play in an event this weekend, but I did go to FNM.
How'd that go?
I played Modern, and I don't really, you know that, and I'm playing a blue-white control deck that I made up with my ex-boyfriend, and I played versus Splinter Twin. I won game one, and then game two, I pretty much kept him at bay the whole time. We ended up going to time, but he ended up winning because he got off his combo, but I was kind of stupid, and I forgot that because I had Jace out, he couldn't hit me with anything because his dudes were like zero. And I was like, oh, crap. Oh, well. You live and you learn. And then I played versus Jund. I won game one, and then I think we drew game two. I don't remember. I played American Control, and I want to say that it was the same thing. I won game one, we drew game two, because I'm still trying to learn everybody's decks, how my deck interacts with theirs. But it was pretty cool that when I sideboarded versus American Control, I put out a story circle. It was very silly. And he was like, what's that? I'm like, oh, man, that's my secret tech that I was telling you about. And he was like, what? Let me see this. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to name White. So when he flashed in his Resto Angel, I can't remember. I did something, and then the story circle, like, it just kept it at bay so that he wouldn't attack me. And then I did something to deal with his Snapcaster, so we just kind of ended up with, I think I still had a bunch of life at the end, and like I said, we drew. But then I played Living End, and I had never... Oh, no, I played Hate Bears before that. And that I couldn't really figure out what he was doing, and by the time I figured it out, I won the first game, he won the second game, and then we drew game three. But then I played Living End, and I had never played Living End before, so I'm like, okay, what are you cycling all these cards for? Whatever. I'm like, yeah, okay. Well, I can't interact with that. All right. I'm putting stuff out, and I get out Narset, thinking, I'm like, oh, sweet, this is going to be dope. And then he was just like, violent outburst. I'm like, oh, shit. And then I looked at him like, you're playing Living End, aren't you? And he smiles at me. I'm like, damn it, because, of course, he's one of my friends from around here. And he, you know, got off his combo and everything. And I was like, okay, that's how this works. So then I tried to deal with it the second game by, like, countering him. But I needed to learn to counter his Living End instead.
Yep.
Instead of the Violent Outburst. And then I didn't know that. Like, I would have been like, I don't know. And then my ex is like, you know what would have been really dope? If you would have remanded that. He's like, because then it would have gone back to his hand. He wouldn't be able to do shit. It's like, okay. So, you know, now I know, but, you know, I'm still learning Modern. So when I hear you guys kind of talking about it, I'm like, okay, this will all make sense to me eventually. But so far, I'm having fun with it. So when I go to States this weekend, I'm just going to weed, have fun, and I guess learn my deck better.
Mm. Yeah. I played Living End for over a year. So if you want practice against it, I still have it. I'm happy to play it. I was actually thinking about playing it because I was facing so many aggro decks between FNM and States. I was like, shit, I should just play Living End and wipe everything. I was like, where did all these creatures come from? And it kind of worried me a little bit. But yeah, Remand is definitely our worst enemy as Living End. It's so hard to deal with. And typically we attack control decks with either Ricochet Trap to redirect the counter, or we will try to attack your mana, or we may use Sin Collector and try to drain you that way. But yeah, control matchups are pretty hard for us.
And I run 4 remands. I don't run any mana leaks. Doesn't work for me. So I'm like,
girl, what are you doing?
No.
Get on the train.
I can't. I learned, like, because I had 2 mana leaks in there, and I had 2 remands, and I was like, dang, who gives a shit about these mana leaks? Like, they're just not working, like, when I need them, or I'm drawing them, and they're in my hand. It's like, now they have all the mana, so what the hell? I guess this is a dead card now. So I'm like, I'll just run, you know, fucking remand. Who cares? So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm doing it wrong.
Maybe you should just play both. Well, if they have a lot of mana, then they just recast it after you remand it, and then you're also sad.
Oh, I don't know. Here, I'll have to send you my deck list via email, Katie, so you can see it. It's hilarious.
I would love that. I love control.
Me too. I can't listen to Remand or hear Remand without imagining Travis Wu. I used to watch his stream, and he would pronounce things very strangely. So, like, he would go, Remand. And so, people say Remand or Remand, and there's still a voice in my head that goes, Remand. And he also used to say the word vicious. But he would go, that's vicious. It's vicious. So I've been known to freak my opponents out when they do something really shitty towards me or something really that really gets me down. I'll be like, that's vicious. And they're like, what? Like, are you okay? And I'm like, it's vicious. And, damn Travis Wu. I'll tell you. So Katie, you informed us of some news about PPTQ changes. What's that about?
Yeah. So Wizards announced that starting for the next PPTQ season, so June 6th, I believe, through August something or other, stores can only schedule pre-TQs that are either the Pro Tour format or sealed.
Okay.
So that'll mean Modern or sealed for this next go-around. So there'll be no standard pre-TQs.
Yay!
I was curious as to... So are they just Ixnaying Legacy? Because I know that people could run Legacy as a pre-TQ format, but
I had never heard of that.
I thought you could do Standard, Modern, Legacy, or Sealed.
No, I haven't heard of any Legacy ones. That's interesting.
If they can, I haven't heard of anybody actually running them, but it would be...
Me neither.
It would be nice.
I thought they had. Maybe I'm just batshit crazy, making stuff up.
Could be wishful thinking.
That is a thing that I do, so. But anyways, so they are trying to diversify it. I know we talked a few weeks ago about how we can improve pre-TQs, and it seems like Wizards took it upon themselves to fix it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty happy that the seasons are just going to be consistent. Like, I remember before this podcast existed, Aaron would do these ladies' roundtables on the deck tees, and I got to participate in one where we talked about PPTQs because they had just been announced. And I remember one of the things that I brought up as sort of a negative thing about the new system was that if there were so many different formats during a season, you had to sort of bounce around, like, this week you're playing Standard, this week you're playing Modern, next week you're playing Sealed, and you don't have, like, a whole season of one format to, you know, invest all of your time in and keep improving at. So I'm really glad that this change has been put in place. Like, I'm really glad that we're going to be able to just play Modern for a season or play Standard for a season, and I don't know. It's just exciting for me.
You can't play Legacy. I just made it up. I'm sorry.
Oh.
Keep going.
You're two for two with the trolls tonight, man.
I know. Aww.
I'm not going to believe anything you say for the rest of the show.
That's fair. I'm probably just lying, so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about the changes. I think especially with Modern Masters 2 coming up, you know, I'm somebody who's always been concerned about the, you know, the state of the format. And I did, when they cut down to just one Modern Pro Tour, and, you know, when they, you know, had announced the GP schedule, you know, I was one of those people that said, you know, what's going to happen to the format? Is it still going to survive? Are people going to want to play it? And, you know, I think that this might be a little bit of a shot in the arm for Modern, where it might keep people interested in it. It might inspire people to try it. And I don't see anything. And even the Sealed people, you know, I've never been somebody who wants to hoard it all for myself. You know, I'm fine with Sealed being tossed a bone. I would be happy with Legacy being tossed a bone. Something just had to change. I mean, 80% Standard? Absolutely not. Right. That was out of control. So,
how do you feel? Do you think this, like, negatively impacts some people, though? Like, people who can't afford Modern quite yet or something, who are typically, you know, grinding Standard or were in this last go-around. Do you think that it's negative that they can't choose, like, stores can't choose Standard as well? Or Modern in the off months?
I mean, I think some people will be negatively affected, but I remember seeing a comment, I think it was on Twitter, about this, and somebody said, if you're that serious about getting on the Pro Tour, you will find a deck. Like, you will play Burn if you have to. You will borrow a deck if you have to. You will invest the money if you have to. I think the people who are really serious about the grind will find a way to still get those cards. You don't necessarily have to just buy a deck. I mean, I know several people that don't even really own that many cards. They just borrow decks from time to time, and that's how they do their thing. And, you know, I think that's what I think. But I think for the greater good, though, I think it's a good change.
Yep, I agree.
I'm down with it. And I really don't play Modern, but now it's more of an excuse to do so. So It'll be fun.
Yeah.
So our friend Gabby Spartz wrote a wonderful article for Channel Fireball that included some tips on how to make the environment better for women. Fun fact, I actually know Gabby personally. I've met her several times at events. She's super lovely. She expressed interest in being one of the co-hosts of the show. But unfortunately, her scheduling only allowed her to record later on in the day and on different days than us, so we weren't able to make it happen. But she's super lovely, and if you get a chance to watch her stream, you should, because she's awesome. And this post blew up. I think it had like 1,000 comments on Reddit.
Oh, jeez.
And 500 on Channel Fireball's website.
It was up to like 720 when I checked this morning. It was absurd.
Hundreds of retweets.
Yeah.
What did you all think about this?
I really liked it. I mostly agreed with her points, especially the last two. Like, I know we've discussed the importance of visibility on the show, and I think she really hammered that home at the end of her article. And another thing I really liked was the little anecdote that she told about the teammate who apologized to her when her opponent sort of lashed, I don't know if he necessarily lashed out at her, but he was just sort of like carrying on about how he had lost to a girl. And I really like that story. I think more men need to be good allies and call out bad behavior when they see it. So those are really important things to bring up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a, I was judging GP Denver and I had a negative experience with a player who said something that made me feel uncomfortable. And then the next day basically repeated the same thing when he saw me again. And I was like, hey, you shouldn't do that. It makes me feel like this and this. And then I just kept going and I didn't even like wait for his response. And then the next day on Sunday, he came up and found me and he was like, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean for it to come across like that. I was just trying to kid with you. I'm sorry if I made you feel bad. And I was just like, that's really awesome that you came up to say sorry. Like, a lot of people would have just been like, oh, I'll leave her alone. I won't pursue it anymore. But he was really, like, genuinely sorry and didn't know that he was making me feel uncomfortable. Mm. And I thought that was really awesome. And it sounds like she kind of had the same thing with the teammate. Like, it just pays for people to be like, hey, this isn't cool. Sorry that that happened. Mm-hmm. And just keep going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked what she had to say. I did agree with her that, you know, you don't need to point out the obvious. You are playing a girl. Some people, though, maybe do see, you know, that their opponent is a girl and that maybe that is something interesting to them. Maybe they don't have a lot of women that play at their store. Maybe they've only played Magic with their, like, close guy friends. So there could be that to it. The things that she said about good hygiene, yes, because that's basic con etiquette. Like, if you go to Gen Con, Anime Central, any of those things are always like, don't forget your soap. You know, you should be clean, you know, polished when you go somewhere. You don't have to be wearing a tux or anything, but at least look presentable to your fellow man. The for a girl thing, I could totally agree with that as well. And the preconceived notions about women, I thought, you know, just handle everyone on a case-by-case basis. Just because, you know, I may have had, and I can't say I have had, a personal bad experience with a guy doesn't mean the next one that I play is going to be the same way. Speaking up about negativity, totally. Totally about that.
Yeah. I liked her post. I thought it was really good. I'm glad that it got people talking. The only minor quibble I had, and I don't think that she meant for it to come off like this, but she indicated at the start of the post that she wanted to keep things positive and that she didn't want to talk about some of the things that she experienced because she didn't want to seem like she was complaining. Mm-hmm. And I remember when our first episode came out, one of the criticisms that we received was that we were too negative. Mm-hmm. And I do think there is room at the table for talking about the negative experiences because when a post like this comes up, there are going to be those people who say, is this happening? I've never seen this. And so you do need to share those experiences and you need to say, you know what, this did happen to me one time. And these are our experiences and they are valid and that they shouldn't be dismissed. And, you know, I think that we do a really good job of, you know, critiquing and complimenting. Like, I don't think we've ever just been solely negative, mm-hmm. you know, but there is this mindset that that it has to be positive all the time. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to say that I do think there is room for, you know, some criticism or some examples of negative behavior. I think that can be part of the discussion too.
Mm-hmm.
So examples, so people can see that and say, hey, I did that and I didn't know that was a problem. That can be a learning experience too.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you think about the people who, the critics, because there are a lot of comments on this. I don't know if you've been able to brave the storm, but there were people mm-hmm. who were offended by the hygiene comment. Apparently that struck a nerve with some people. Mm-hmm. There was the comment of, well, there aren't any female role models. Jackie and Melissa are gone, so who does that leave? And mm-hmm. that was a popular comment that came up. You know, did you guys brave any of that? Like, what did you think of the other side of the coin?
So I didn't read any of the comments myself, but I did talk to a number of people in the last 24 hours just about the article. And I saw like a bunch of people on Facebook were posting it in various groups and discussing it. I think the personal hygiene comment was something that I saw criticized a lot. And I think the person who put it most succinctly said something like, you know, in the same breath, she's telling men to put aside their preconceived notions about women. And at the same time, she's bringing up a stereotype about men. And so, you know, a lot of people just kind of stopped reading at that point and didn't take the article seriously. And I don't know. I'm not really sure how to sort of how to deal with that, because like I have not actually had to deal with like personal hygiene issues in a game store. I don't know how pervasive it is. I've heard a couple of anecdotes from people. I don't know. I've heard a bunch of people saying things like it wasn't the right place to discuss that kind of issue because it would turn off the audience. But, you know, it's still a valid complaint that she has. So I'm not sure how you sort of balance that.
Well, the issue, I think, like she said in the article, though, the problem is nobody's talking about it. I mean, I've seen this happen at events. And I mean, I love my friends enough to say, girl, let's get you a mint. Let's fix. If your bra strap's exposed, I'm going to be that friend that tells you. You know, if we go clothes shopping and you come out looking like an extra on Sons of Anarchy, I'm going to tell you. You know, I love you enough to not send you out into the world looking like that. And I can agree that I can understand people saying that Channel Fireball may not have been the place to have that conversation, but people need to be having that conversation. They need to be having a lot of conversations. And, you know, you do see a lot of enabling when it comes to the cleanliness, and you see enabling when it comes to the jokes and the for a girl. And that's the problem, is people aren't having these conversations. So I admired her for the fact that she did call people out a little bit, because she was nicer than I would have been. I mean, I've seen this before, and I'm reading the paragraph now about the hygiene, and she doesn't say it's just men. She says the only thing she says is, I can imagine how many girls are turned off by the aroma. But in that paragraph, it doesn't explicitly say, you know, if one of your male friends is guilty of personal hygiene, say something. She's just saying, if one of your friends is guilty of personal hygiene, say something. You know, yes, it's scary to confront a friend, again, no gender specified, regarding personal hygiene, but someone has to do it. And I agree. And I think that as a whole, it needs to happen. And I think that's a topic where, if it is ruffling a little feathers or some feathers, I think maybe that's a good thing, because there's a whole lot of enabling going on.
That's right. Yep.
It's something that judges try to handle. Like, it kind of falls under unsportsman conduct minor. Like, if somebody smells so bad to the point where their opponent is like, I don't want to play you because I cannot stand how stanky you is, then, you know.
You got to put them on Front Street.
Yeah, and it's kind of awkward for judges. Like, I'm glad that we're having this conversation in the Magic community currently, because, you know, judges are supposed to be able to handle that, but it's hard to tell somebody, I'm giving you a warning because you smell bad. Can you fix it? Like, that's not a comfortable thing. And I feel like if more friends step up to the plate to be like, hey, dude, I'm going to tell you that you smell bad so that those judges don't have to, I think that that makes judging a little bit easier. Not that our job has to be easier, but it's just an awkward thing to bring up. And so I'm glad that it is being brought up. We had a person in a PTQ that I was head judging in January, and I had two people come up to me and talk to me and be like, this guy reeks. And I was like, okay, well, and I kind of talked to the TO who was judging with me, and he was like, I've talked to him before. He doesn't believe in he doesn't believe in deodorant. And then that kind of brings up like a different issue. Of how do you approach them at that point? What are your guys' thoughts on that? Because you don't have, you know, people don't have to wear deodorant as like a law or anything, obviously. And so if I were to go up to him and be like, hey, I need you to smell better, like, how can I expect him to do that? What do you guys think about that situation?
It's a rough situation, but quite frankly, I mean, that's something that you learn, like, when you go through puberty, to be like, well, now I have hair in all these strange places, and now I might smell funny. I mean, even girls, to be like, shave your armpits, you know, if that works for you. You know, it might have more of an odor if you don't. Make sure that you try, you know, to use some deodorant or do something. Body spray, some Febreze, whatever works for you. I mean, heck, I know vegans that don't use, like, you know, conventional deodorants, but they use something to, like, smell nice, or even more earthly people. I mean, there's something you can do. It's just called being, I guess, decent to your fellow man, like I said before.
And that's what he did. He uses like the, I don't even know what it's called. Somebody told me the name of it. It's like
deodorant?
No, it has like a special name that I guess I don't want to label people, but like hippie-ish type people commonly use. Sorry.
Those people over there.
Like, it's just a popular thing in that kind of culture. But I can't remember what it was. I talked to him and he was like, I do use this. And he pulled it out and that was the thing that stunk. And I was like, oh no. Well, that thing smells and people aren't liking it. So
that's a whole other animal then.
Yeah, it was really awkward. But go ahead, Erin. I think you were starting to say.
I think that, you know, this falls under how if you, I don't know about where you guys live, but typically businesses have that little sign that say, we have the right to refuse service for any reason. Hmm. And, you know, if you're not wearing a t-shirt, you know, no shoes, no shirt, no service was a thing. Or if you show up to a restaurant shirtless, they have the right to refuse you service. And if you go to certain nightclubs, they might have a dress code of, you know, no ball caps, no saggy jeans or things like that. I don't think there's anything wrong with a TO having those same guidelines of saying, you know, we do have the right to refuse you. I remember when I had Sheldon Menery on my show and he made a comment about how, you know, being a judge is like giving customer service, and that when you DQ somebody from an event, you're giving good customer service to everybody else in the event. You know, it's a little, the person being kicked out may not see it that way, but you're doing what's best for everybody else. And I think this might be something that falls under that category where you're doing it for the sanity and for the comfort of 2,000 other people at your GP. It's what you have to do. And as a business, you have the right to make that call.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a touchy subject for sure. I'm not sure I came at it the right way, but that's just how I feel about it. But mm-hmm. I don't know if we'll ever have a right answer, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, I know that we talked about the encouraging female magic role models. That kind of bothered me when people were like, well, there's Jackie and Melissa. There's no one else. They're gone. And I'm like, you've got Feline. Mm-hmm. You've got Jadeen. You have MJ Scott. You know, people are only thinking of women in a competitive vein. Mm-hmm. You have Kathleen from Loading Ready Run. I mean, there are plenty of women out there. You just have to want to give them the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So.
Someone on Reddit actually mentioned Tifa and us in their comment on Reddit. They were talking about the female role models, and they said, I know Tifa is doing things, but I don't think I would have even heard of her if I hadn't dug through Twitter a while ago looking for interesting magic folks to follow, and then linked the first episode of our show following it. So I don't know if that says anything.
I think it does. Thank you, Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
Any other closing remarks on Gabby's wonderful post?
I did send her a tweet about her post. Because she was basically looking for other feedback on it. She wanted to know if there was anything she missed or any other ideas people had. And I sent her a post that said, I wanted to add that men need to treat women in their playtest groups as equals, which is something that I struggle with. And she gave me what was a pretty good reply. She said, this is luckily not something I've dealt with, but I could see it being a big problem for some. I was glad that she acknowledged that. And, you know, as we've mentioned on the show before, like, we can only talk about our own experiences. And I think, you know, what we need as a community is just for more women to come forward and share their experiences, because one of us can't possibly speak for all of us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly. And a lot of women were showing, you know, their support or talking about maybe their experiences for the first time in some of the comments, saying, oh, this happened to me, or this hasn't happened to me, but this other situation has, and thank you for addressing it. So if her post gets people talking, she's already, you know, done the right thing.
Right.
Yeah.
I did have a friend send me a private message just being like, did you see that article? And I told her I had, and she was like, it really bothers me when women don't stand up for other women.
Yep.
Because I saw that there were a few comments that was like, this doesn't happen. Magic's not a male-dominated game. I don't have problems. You guys shouldn't have problems either. Like, that kind of vein of thinking. And I was just wondering what you guys thought about.
It infuriates me.
Yep.
Agreed.
I've gotten to the point where I'm almost numb to the male criticism. You know, like, I can wade through that Reddit thread, and there might be one or two guys who set me off, but it's other women that drive me to drink. You know, when I see women like that who are, well, I don't experience that, quit fucking up my gig. No. Just because you don't experience it doesn't mean that we don't experience it.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't relate to you, then sit on your hands and be quiet and let us have our moment. And I didn't mean to come off as indignant as I am. I'm sorry. But, you know, just because you don't relate to it doesn't mean that you have to shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
And that really upsets me. And, you know, if it is going good for you at your store, that's great. Let's make it so every woman has it great at her store. Why should you and I be the only ones that have it really good? Because I have it really good at my store. I have 3 stores I can go to, 4 stores I can go to that are amazing. But I see so many horror stories, and I want them to have what I have. So I don't technically need to say anything. You know, when I hear the horror stories, I haven't experienced it, but I'm not shutting them down. I'm not invalidating their experiences. I'm even more inclined to want to help when I hear things like that. And, you know, it's bad enough that we get that from a lot of guys. We don't need it from you, too. And I'm not saying that we have to agree, and I'm not saying that we have to be friends, but, you know, you can quietly support. You don't have to take that extreme angle, that extreme opposition. It's very frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
I promise I'm not going to rant for the rest of the show.
You're fine.
I'm so sorry.
But I also liked how a lot of men were saying that they thought that a lot of the things that she was saying were just common sense, that they just kind of roll like that normal. It's like, awesome, I want to know you. Be my new best friend.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We received another listener email. We've actually received several. Like, this is, I don't think we're going to have a shortage of questions anytime soon.
We should do a mailbag show.
I know.
We've talked about it. Well, I think the week that we're in Vegas, I think we might just do a mailbag show, like either before that, or I know Katie was talking about her schedule being a little different in May, and that came up as well. But people are writing us, so we're happy to keep answering them. And this email is from Irene. Hello, Irene.
Irene Adler. A woman after my own heart.
Big Sherlock fan.
My dog's name is Watson.
How is Watson doing?
Oh, he's much better and back to destroying things. He is no longer sick. He's doing good.
Good, good. Irene was actually the person who left us our first really long comment on the first episode saying how much she loved the show. So big shout out to Irene. And her email says, hi, the girlfriend bracket. I recently watched The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, an awesome show on Netflix that you should watch post-haste, and found myself laughing/cringing at the following quote. I'm always amazed at what women will do because they're afraid of being rude. I find that I have trouble asserting myself with that one opponent who is playing slowly or doing that thing where they tap mana, jab a spell at you, and then throw it in their graveyard, forcing you to figure out what the heck just happened, because I don't want to be the pushy, brusque player that I hate playing against. It's gotten better as I've gone along, but I still find myself saying we both should play faster versus you need to pick up the pace. I'm a fine technical player and will generally top 8 a PPTQ or similar level of tournament. I've received a lot of advice along the lines of get over it from other people. None of my peers seem to share my experience. Do you have trouble asserting yourselves, or have you experienced this in the past? And if so, what have you done to overcome it? Thank you for being so rad. XO, Irene.
So I used to be, I guess, a bit afraid of appearing overly rude. And sometimes, you know, I have had the exact thing where my opponent is playing a lot slower than I would like, and I say, we should pick up the pace. And I guess that it is a little bit more rude, I guess, to say, you need to go faster. But I don't think that this is just like a gender thing. Like, I think this is just a common decency type thing. And I think sometimes it does appear more rude coming from a female, which we've talked about previously a little bit. But as I've gotten more competitive, I don't want to say that I've gotten less nice, but I guess I'm less caring of what people think of me at a competitive tournament. Like, if you're playing slow, I'm going to tell you you're playing slow and maybe you should hurry up just a bit. And I'm not going to be like, hey, you suck and you're playing slow. Mm-hmm. But I will be like, you need to play faster. We're not going to finish. And I think if I hadn't gotten more competitive, I would still be in the whole, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. I don't want to appear as cruel or mean or rushing you or anything. But as of right now, I guess I stopped caring.
Yeah, I think I've always been there, because even like from the time I started playing Magic, I've always had that competitive mindset, even when I wasn't playing competitively. So I haven't always cared as much, I guess. I know that sounds terrible, but I understand that there's a difference between being rude and being assertive. And if my opponent isn't playing fast enough, I'll usually in between rounds, like as we're shuffling up, I'll say something like, "Hey, would you mind playing a little slower in the next round? Like that first game took a little while." And usually my opponent will just sort of nod and say, "No problem," and it's not a big deal. But I think the biggest problem I have is that at lower REL, I have a hard time flipping that switch and turning that off. And that's something that I personally need to work on. Like, there was one point at the Dragons of Tarkir pre-release that I was playing a game with someone who had only played casually, because you get a very wide variety of players at pre-releases. So this was someone who had only played Kitchen Table Magic. And every time I would try to do something during my second main phase, he would immediately start like taking his turn and like drawing a card, playing a land, playing spells. And I would be like, "Excuse me, I'm not done with my turn yet. Like, could you wait for me to pass my turn before you start doing that?" And the first time he was like, "Oh yeah, yeah, no problem. Like, when I play with my friends, we just don't do anything on our second main phase. So it's just a bad habit." And this happened like 5 times over the course of the match, where like I was in the middle of doing something and he would just start drawing a card and playing a land. And I finally just went, "Excuse me," like loudly. I was like, "I'm sorry, but could you please wait for me to say pass or go or whatever it is?" And I felt bad afterwards. Like, I felt bad that I had snapped at him, but I mean, I feel like I have a good register of like whether I've offended someone. And so like I could tell that he was kind of taken aback by it. And so after the match was over, I apologized to him and I was like, "Look, I'm sorry if I came off as rude. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings or anything. I know this is just like a fun pre-release event, but just be mindful now that you actually are playing in a sanctioned tournament that people are going to do things on their second main phases. And it's kind of rude for you to start just taking your turn when someone's in the middle of doing something." So that situation worked itself out pretty well, but I understand that there is kind of a fine line between being rude and just trying to play the game correctly.
Yeah, I agree. That's why when I play versus someone and maybe it's a bad habit I've developed now, but whenever I want to be sure they're done, I'll say anything else and they'll be like, "Nope, it's all you." I'll be like, "Okay." Because sometimes people forget to even say, "I'm done, it's your turn." Mm-hmm. And so I just like to clarify. And so sometimes I've had people kind of zing it back at me. Like, I had this one guy, I think it was the annoying guy I played at FNM a couple weeks ago. I was like, "Anything else?" And he was like, "Anything else?" And he's like, "No." And I was like,
"Was this
okay.
the one that kept saying ugh to all of your things?"
Yeah, and it's like, "I'm sorry, would you prefer that I just kind of did my own thing? I mean, I can just, you know, solitaire this by myself, but we're playing a game together and I just want to make sure that, you know, we're copacetic." And so even when I go to a tournament, I'll clarify and be like, "Okay," because I hate it when, if I like cast a spell or something, I wait to see, do they have a response to it? But I hate when they cast a spell and they don't even think I've countered. It's like, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa. I might have a counter for this. Let me tell you that it resolves or if it doesn't resolve." Like, I do have a response to things and people are just like, "Well, I'm going to do this and this." And it's like, "Whoa, hold the train. Like, give me a second." And so I don't feel bad about pointing that out to them, maybe not in like a shitty way. And I don't think that you were being shitty with him. I think that just after a while, it just became frustrating because you're like, "I told you a couple times now, it's been a couple turns in, you know, is there something that you can do to keep reminding yourself that this is something that you have to give me a chance to do?" I don't know. I've never really had a problem with being rude or assertive because I want to make sure that I'm doing what I want to do correctly and that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. The one thing I had to get better about was actually calling a judge because I would get like ready to be like, "Oh, this isn't that serious. Do I need to call a judge?" Well, he would probably give me the wrong information. Maybe I should call a judge, because there was one time something happened and granted it was a zero level event, but if I had called the judge, things would have turned out differently. So after that time, I'm like, fuck this. I am calling a judge over the smallest thing if I feel the need. And I tell, you know, my opponents that too. They're like, oh, I don't know if I can do this. I'm like, well, you know, I'm not 100% sure on that either. Best to call the judge. And they'll be like, judge. And I'll be like, judge, straight up in the air. Come and clarify this for me.
I've never been afraid of being rude, obviously, but not because of that, but because I want my game to go the way it's supposed to. You know, I feel like I've heard a lot of people say that they don't call the judge because I'm afraid of seeming rude. No, if I'm going to lose my game because I didn't call that judge or my opponent got away with something, that's on me. You know, I need to get over that and do the right thing and call a judge. There was an incident at States the other day where my opponent was confused about my life total. And I was happy to walk him through it. Like, I wasn't shitty about it, but I was like, you know, I'm at this. Would you like me to wind it back and you know, walk you through how we got here? And he was content to just be like, no, I'll trust you. And I was like, I'd rather you not. Like, I would rather you understand how I got here so that, let's say the game is an end and you're like, yeah, I don't think you were at 17. You know, I'd rather you not have that nagging doubt, and I'd rather that we be on the same page and that you understand for your benefit and for mine. You know, so I'm not seen as that opponent who just tried to brush it under the rug, because there are people that will do that. They'll be like, well, I'm at 16. I'm not going to tell you how, but I am. Here's my life pad. No, I was happy to say I paid one for my fetch. I paid two for a thoughtsies. I paid two for dismember. You know, I thought I was being a good opponent by doing that. And these guys that were sitting to my left, they said to me, what, are you a judge or something? and I looked at him and I said, no, I just like good communication. And it's interesting that led to them thinking that I was a judge or that I was being too assertive. I thought I was doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. And it was strange to me that somebody would label that as being rude or whatever. You're doing the right thing. And that's something I don't think you should feel bad about.
Yeah. Mm-mm.
Anything else we'd like to get off our chest before we wrap up the show?
So, it is official that we are all going to Vegas. Am I correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Boom.
Yes. I decided at the 11th hour that I was going to go. I talked it over with my boyfriend, and I said, well, you know, I'd like to go if it was possible. And so he said, well, we're supposed to go to Gen Con. But if you really want to go to Vegas, I will help you do that, and you just have to go by yourself. And that was very kind of him to do. I'll try to still go to Gen Con if we have the money available, but yeah, I'm all set. Hotel's booked, my terrifying flight is booked, and I registered last night for the GP, so I guess we'll see what happens. I expect good times.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is fantastic.
So this means we all get to eat a lot of food together, right? Mm-hmm.
Lots of food. Mm-hmm.
Or separately.
I love that we have our different concerns. Like, Katie's concerned about the food. Chris is concerned with her plane not crashing.
Oh, my God.
Yes. I don't know what I'm going to wear. And Hallie's just like, I just want to crush.
I just want there to be a ladies' draft.
Yeah. That would be so awesome. Like, I was thinking about you guys talking about that from 2013, and I was like, that would be so dope. That's the thing I have to tell myself, as opposed to when I'm booking my flight with my boyfriend and I'm like, don't click yes. And he's like, why? I'm like, because it's not refundable. What if I change? I'm like literally in tears. And I'm like, I don't think I can do this on my own. Like, I can't fly well. He's like, you'll be fine. He's like, you'll take a Xanax. You'll listen to your headphones. You'll be okay. So it's sealed in. So you'll have to tear me off the ceiling, I guess. But I'll be there.
And once you get there, you won't be alone. We'll be able to hang out with each other.
Mm-hmm. I know. It's just getting there. But my coworkers have been to Vegas several times. So they're like, oh my God, you're a Vegas virgin. We want to tell you all these good things to go do. And you have to go here, and you have to go here, and you have to do this. And then you can play some magic too. And I'm like, okay. So I'm like super hyped now. Everyone's making me hype about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited. I'll be staying with Hallie for 3 days. 2 days? 3 days?
3 days.
3 days. And then Sunday, I will be sharing a room with Katie.
Yes.
And we will have a really good time. I was upset that Brittany is on vacation that week.
Aww.
I know, I checked for you.
Brittany who?
I was... Brittany who?
The only
Brittany. The only Brittany. I'm sorry. There's a prominent...
Brittany that matters.
There's a prominent female Brittany in the judging magic community, and I didn't know if you were mentioning her as well.
It's Brittany, bitch.
Why are you on this show?
I'm so sorry.
Aaron, you're trolling me, aren't you?
Yeah. That's it.
You know, you gotta stop doing this, Katie, because if we get to Vegas and something really bad happens to you, and you're just like, oh man, you know, I got locked up in jail, there was some shifty dealings, or some crazy thing happened, I'm gonna think you're just full of shit at that point, and be like, that bitch can stay in jail.
Oh man.
Good
I'll
times.
Have to reform my ways for next week, I'm sorry. I've been off my game today, sorry.
So if anybody's enjoyed listening to us talk tonight, how can they find you all? How can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie, and you can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. And I just made a new Gmail account specifically for reader and listener emails, and that is hcsmtg@gmail.com. And you can read my articles here on Gathering Magic.
I'm Katie. My Twitter handle is @KatieN_14. And you can reach me by Gmail, katie.neil14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is @techriz, T-E-H-K-R-I-Z. My Gmail is yotehkriz@gmail.com, yo to Chris. And my Tumblr is also to Chris.
And I am Erin. You can find me on Twitter at @OriginalEstrus. That is OriginalEstrus. You can email me personally at estrus@elitistjerks.com. You can email the show at our spiffy new inbox, which we talked about earlier in the show, thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Send us your questions. If you have any feedback for us, if you just want some advice, we're happy to read it on the show and help you out. So thank you all so much for listening, and we will see you all next week. Bye.
Send us your pictures of your bathrooms.
Please.